to sight.
Spend the day with sight.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Dear listeners, good morning and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. A warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live, live hosting and broadcasting from Radio Sai Studios. The time right now in our studio is 11 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and now it's time for the segment Soul Inspirations. And as always, I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. So, dear listeners, to begin with, let us all collectively offer our most humble, prayerful and grateful pranams at the lotus feet of the voice and listener, the heart and soul of Radio Sai Global Harmony, that is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And I thank him profusely for giving me this opportunity to host a segment in his radio week after week, every Thursday. Well, the previous segment, Morning Glory, you listened to conversation with Mrs. Jyotsna Reddy, wife of late Mr. Raja Reddy and daughter of Panduranga Dikshit. And this, what you listened to, were the audio of the video series Just with Divinity. The video of this has been already uploaded in Radio Sai Global Harmony's site. And one more episode of the conversation will be played next week in the segment Morning Glory. So today in the segment Soul Inspiration, dear listeners, I thought to begin with, I will read few excerpts from Swami's Divine Discourse, which he delivered on 17th of February in the year 1996 during the occasion of Mahashivaratri. Well, why I chose this discourse which Swami gave on the occasion of Mahashivaratri is just because we are going to witness the festival of Mahashivaratri 20 days from now. That is on 4th of March. So, to begin with, as I said, I'll read excerpts from Swami's Divine Discourse. And I quote, well, in this discourse, Swami speaks about the significance of Mahashivaratri. And I quote, the cosmic process, Srishti, Sthiti and Layam, creation, sustenance and dissolution goes on in every human being. Creation is the outcome of sankalpa, that is thought. Sthiti is protection of creation. Layam is the merger of creation in its source. Srishti, Sthiti and Layam are also identified with the three qualities, sattva, rajas and tamas. The three gunas represent the Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara. The Trinity represents the three lokas, the three worlds. The three worlds and the Trinity are present in every human being. The three are to be regarded as one and worshipped as Shivam. What is Shivam? It is the embodiment of auspiciousness. When man recognizes the unified form of the Trinity, his humanness acquires auspiciousness. In a government, there are different departments like education, finance, etc. Likewise, in the spiritual field also, there are different departments. They are creation, sustenance and dissolution. Each department has a head. Each head has to govern his department on right lines. There is an overlord presiding over all departments. He is like the prime minister in a cabinet. He is God. He is called Allah. By attributing different names and forms to God, divinity is fragmented in various ways. The one divine is responsible for the threefold cosmic process. These three aspects of God can be seen in the English word God. G-O-D, God. G represents generation, that is Srishti. O represents organization, that is Sthiti. And D represents dissolution, that is Layam. God represents the unity of the three aspects. There is a misunderstanding about these three. Layam is considered as destruction or dissolution. Its real meaning is mergence. O represents organization. It means protection. G stands for generation, that is creation. Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara are three potencies immanent in man. To understand this, it is essential to follow the spiritual path. Spirituality does not mean leading a lonely ascetic life. Spirituality means getting rid of attachment and hatred and looking upon the whole humanity as one. Everyone should understand this inner meaning of spirituality. Shivaratri is an auspicious night. Man is endowed with infinite potencies. All that you experience by way of seeing, hearing and the like are reflections of the inner being. The significance of this experience has to be properly understood. For instance, you experience the night every day. These are ordinary nights. They are nights of darkness, but Shivaratri is an auspicious night. How is it auspicious? There are 16 aspects for mind. The moon is the presiding deity for the mind. Of the 16 phases of the moon, on Shivaratri, it is the 14th day of Margashirsha month, that is lunar calendar. 15 of the phases are absent. On the day of Shivaratri, it is possible to get full control of one's mental faculties. Hence, it is considered an auspicious day. Auspiciousness consists in diverting the mind towards God. This calls for getting rid of the inherited animal tendencies in man. This is the occasion to recognize the omnipresence of the divine in all beings and in all objects. It follows that whomsoever you adore or contemn, you are adoring or condemning God. You must follow the injunction, help ever, hurt never. Every human being has sacred qualities based on his Shivatmam, divine essence. Hence, man should realize his inherent divinity, though his body is made up of the five elements. Thereby, humanness is transformed into divinity. The human birth is intended for the pursuit of dharma. Dharma implies harmony in thought, word, and deed. When every person realizes his essential divine nature, the entire world will be transformed. The body and the mind are mere instruments. Man's reality is the Atma. Self. Man should use the instruments given to him to perform his duties well and realize his oneness with God. All the phenomena in nature proclaim the glory of the divine. Why foster religious differences? Let everyone carry out and dictate. Let everyone carry out the dictates of the divine. Who governs the universe? Everything that happens is by the will of God. The principal teaching of the Vedas is that all men should strive together in harmony and share their joys together in amity. Through unity, humanity can achieve purity leading to divinity. The three great enemies of man are lust, anger, and greed. These have to be eliminated. The greatest quality in man is love. Love is God. Live in love. Unquote. Dear listeners, what I read out just now were excerpts from Swami's Divine Discourse, which he delivered on 17th of February 1996 on the occasion of Mahashivaratri in Purnachandra Auditorium in Prashanthi Nilayam. And why I read this discourse is because from 20 days from now, that is on 4th of March, we will be celebrating the festival of Mahashivaratri this year, 2019, in Prashanthi Nilayam and everywhere. And this discourse told about, in this discourse, Swami described the significance of Mahashivaratri. Alright, dear listeners, after this discourse, now in the segment of Soul Inspirations, I'll be playing for you an episode of our radio program, that is Reflect and Act. And after this episode, I'll play for you a bhajan. And after the bhajan, you will be joined by Brother Bishu for the next segment of today's Thursday Live, that is Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Have a listen, please.
Sai Ram, and welcome to Reflect and Act. Today's topic is, can we have the cake and eat it as well? Loving Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. In recent centuries, humanity has experienced with three major socio-economic systems. They are, first, the capitalistic system at one end, and second, the communist system at the other extreme end. In between is the third system, namely, hybrid socialistic system that India, for example, tried to operate for about 40 years after its independence. Each system has its passionate advocates, and every system claims that it is the best option for society because it alone can provide good economic and social security besides keeping its citizens happy. These are claims. If, however, one looks carefully at the scorecard, one can find that no system has emerged as a clear-cut winner. The simple reason for this is that no modern socio-economic system is explicitly based upon morality. No doubt implicit in every system is the idea that people would be honest, truthful, and ethical in their behavior. However, the enemies of man lurking inside that Swami often reminds us about are so powerful that they easily overcome the vague commitments to values that these systems demand. That is the fundamental reason why all modern systems are doomed to fail. And the danger posed by such a failure can create a grave crisis in the future, if some core issues hitherto swept under the rug are not frontally confronted. Experts say that for any economic system to operate, four major inputs are necessary: trained human resources, financial capital, infrastructure, and raw material. Where raw material is concerned, mankind draws from a bank called nature. All the renewable as well as the non-renewable material resources that drive the engine called economy are drawn from nature. For thousands of years, everyone labored under the false impression that nature is a bank with infinite resources and that one can draw as much as one wants anytime whatsoever. Well, lately we have discovered, thanks to the galloping population combined with exponentially growing consumerism, that this assumption is not true, and therein lies a serious problem. Planet Earth is finite. It simply cannot provide infinite resources just because we want it to. Lately, this truth has begun to sink in, though only in a rather limited fashion. For example, many have realized that oil, which is one of the principal movers in modern economy, can one day run out. One can go to town on this subject of infinite resources, but we will not for this case. For the present, it suffices to say that consumerism, which is the engine of modern economy, is very wasteful and is placing on planet Earth a burden it simply cannot carry much longer. So, what is the alternative? Swami has indicated this, but before we discuss it, it is pertinent to call attention to a report published several decades ago, known popularly as the Club of Rome report. In effect, it warns mankind as follows. The present consumption pattern is unsustainable. Curtail consumption immediately and drastically. Otherwise, one day, the bank called nature could go broke and you would not be able to draw anything from it any longer. This is the warning given not by religious or spiritual leaders, but by hard-nosed economists based on cold reasoning and pitiless statistics. Now, what does Swami say about this? He, of course, has been telling us long, long time to practice sealing on desires, not from the point of view of the Club of Rome necessarily, but from much higher spiritual considerations. When we place a ceiling on desires, it means we stop buying things we really don't need. And let's be honest, we can jolly well do without most of the gadgets for today, can't we? We get sucked into buying them because of heavy advertisement. Okay, suppose we stop buying all sorts of video games and iPods and so forth. Well, that would then immediately decrease the demand for mercury, cadmium, copper, beryllium, lead, and so forth, which go into all the electrical gadgets we just mentioned. All these are deadly materials when they get into the environment. Now, take, for example, cell phones. Well, there are nearly a billion of them today, and the models change so very often. What happens to the old discarded phones? They end up in India, China, Vietnam, and so forth, where they are dismantled by unskilled people in the process spreading a lot of pollution into the environment. There are so many of today's evils that get automatically eliminated once we cap our desires. Of course, the more important thing is that people who curb desires develop detachment and get closer to God. Skeptics would shake their heads and say, "This is stupid. Consumerism is the engine that drives the modern world. If we curb desires, markets would collapse, unemployment would shoot up, and there would be disaster everywhere." Ceiling on desires may be nice to be talked about, but it will not work in any case. We cannot give it up. In any event, what other alternative is there? We will not get into a debate right now, right here, about the virtues of consumerism, but focus instead on the alternative. To appreciate the significance of that alternative, we must realize that in a consumerist society, products are often created using mass production technology. Superficially, this might make a lot of sense, but it leads to overall unemployment. In decades past, when the economy grew, it also meant increased employment. But these days, economists are talking of jobless growth of economy. In turn, this then leads to a huge gap between the haves and the have-nots, as is being seen today not only in China and India, but even in the United States. So what are we to do? We have to switch from mass production to production by the masses and anchor social life to sharing, caring, rather than competing and exploiting of others. This is where an important teaching of Swami comes into the picture. Swami often says the proper study of mankind is man. This means that mankind must follow the same rules that the Lord God has ordained for the human body, meaning in the human body, there is no organ that is selfish. Not one. All organs perform their functions in a cooperative manner and in harmony with all the other organs rather than competing with each other and being selfish. As Swami says, when a sweet is put in the mouth, the tongue tastes it, but it does not keep it to itself. Rather, it sends the sweet directly to the stomach. The stomach digests and sends the digested matter to the intestines. The intestines then allow the nutrition to leak into the blood vessels, which carry the nutrients to the muscles all over the body, and so forth. One can give any number of such illustrations. So the main lesson here that our body teaches us loud and clearly is that individuals in society must care for and cooperate with each other, instead of being ruthlessly competitive and selfish. Next, they must function in harmony for a common goal. The welfare of society as a whole, or mankind, even as the organs of the body function for the benefit of the body as a whole. This is where the concept of trusteeship comes into the picture. In essence, what it means is that individuals, as well as groups like corporations and even nations, function as trustees of God. Both individuals and groups must take the following view. Every skill and resource we have belongs really to God and has been given to us to be used judiciously for and on His behalf. In that sense, we are trustees of God. And this is how the trusteeship idea works. A doctor uses his medical knowledge to relieve suffering and not for making money. This does not mean he should not charge fees. He could and should, especially if he is engaged in private practice. However, he does not overcharge or treat for free those who cannot afford to pay money. Whatever he does, he offers to God as recognition of his role as a trustee of God. Corporations, too, must operate in the very same spirit. Thus, drug companies would focus on saving lives rather than maximizing profits as they do these days with good PR to cover up the antisocial behavior. Now, one might ask, but what happens to jobs? Presently, globalization-driven economy tends to improve the economy while decreasing the number of jobs at the same time. In the trusteeship regime, mass production is replaced by a production by the masses. Some might wonder, will this work? Well, it does. And the milk revolution in Gujarat is proof. Here, thousands of dairy farmers joined together to form a successful milk cooperative. So successful has this cooperative movement been that India, which was used to import milk powder directly from Denmark, has now become the largest producer of milk in the whole world. And the venture has given employment to thousands and thousands of people. If we think carefully about it, mankind does have an alternative to the present consumerist ways of life, which is wasteful and which is leading us straight to disaster. That alternative, of course, demands the price of simple living and a spirit of cooperation, with people caring for each other and sharing with each other exactly as the organs in a healthy body do. Many dismiss such an idea with the commitment, "All this is nice in theory, but will not work." Well, it all depends on what people truly want. People go to great extent to make money these days, to take care of their children, to be successful in life, and so forth. That is because they value the end objective. In every case, sacrifice is involved, and success represents the triumph of willpower, which is the key to discipline. If in the same way we attach great importance to the real purpose of human birth and life, then there should be really no difficulty in practicing a ceiling on desires and letting life be guided by the principle of trusteeship. This principle calls for detachment, and actually in many things we do, we are detached without even being aware of it. A cashier, for example, inside of a bank handles large sums every day, large sums of money, yet he does not even imagine it to be his money, not even for a second. A taxi driver working for a cab company does not think he owns the cab, and so forth. There are many examples one could think of. With effort, one can extend the idea to things that one believes belongs to the person concerned. In the trusteeship regime, a rich man would regard the wealth he has as given to him by God for being used for divine purposes. People today might be very skeptical about such an attitude of life. But you would be surprised to learn that when the late Professor Kasturi, Baba's biographer, was born, his parents took the baby to the local Shiva temple, placed the baby before the idol, and prayed, "O Lord, you have given us this child of yours to us for looking after and bringing up. Please give us all that we need to do your duty as best we can." Well, if we want to, if we love God, if we want to avoid inflicting more wounds on Mother Earth, then we can and ought to be able to change our mindset. If we fail to do that and want the present untenable lifestyle, then we must also get ready to pay the steep price for it. Scientists are very much concerned about the rapid melting of Arctic ice. And if the same happens with the ice in Antarctica as well, then terrible things are sure to happen, like half of Bangladesh getting swallowed by the sea. Experts say that even if humanity stops consuming oil today, it is not possible to stop global warming. The process started will stabilize at best, and all that one can hope for is preventing of still further rises in the long term. The bottom line here is simple. If we want to eat the cake, then it would disappear and we cannot have it. The options are clear, and the time to decide is now. Tomorrow may be too late. What do you think? Do you agree or disagree? For Reflect and Act, Jay Sairam.
In the summer of 1964, Bhagwan inaugurated his ashram in Bengaluru and picked Mr. Ramabrahman, an extremely committed devotee, to manage its affairs. Many years later, when the marriage of Ramabrahman's granddaughter was fixed, he offered the wedding invitation to Bhagwan, but did not pray for permission to travel to Guntur for the function, even though he loved the grandchild. However, Swami himself said, "You can go and attend the wedding." It was still a fortnight away. 15 days passed, but Swami did not talk about it again. It would take at least 2 days for Ramabrahman to reach Guntur. Since Swami was silent, Ramabrahman too kept quiet. On the day of the marriage, Swami suddenly looked at Ramabrahman and said, "Hey Ramabrahman, you didn't go for the marriage?" With utter humility, he replied, "Swami, I thought it is not your will that I travel. Else, you would have definitely asked me to go." Bhagwan was so pleased that he immediately caressed his cheek and with great love patted his shoulder and said, "Good boy." Mr. Ramabrahman was actually 75 years old then. Swami then looked at all the people around and said, "This is the sign of a true devotee. When the master commands, a true devotee just obeys, does not analyze with his limited mind." When an elderly devotee had a swollen and painful leg, Swami said, "No need to go to a doctor. Apply lukewarm starch water of rice on your leg." He did that and was healed instantly. When another person tried the same remedy, his condition actually worsened. In the Shirdi Avatar, when a devotee was suffering from diarrhea, Baba told him to eat groundnuts, which actually would aggravate the illness, but he was cured. What works is not the prescription, but the Guru's instruction. The path to our deliverance is implicit obedience. It can wipe out mountains of karma. This is the best aradhana we can make to our Sadguru, Sri Satya Sai.
ఈశ్వరాంబనందన సాయి జనార్దన
ఈశ్వరాంబనందన సాయి జనార్దన ఈశ్వరాంబనందన.